Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, June 29th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Civil servants reject a $100 government offer as compensation for unpaid June salaries.
If the government wants to give them $100 on Friday, that's a non-starter. We demand our pay in full. And that's the position we have taken today.
Zimbabwe's industry minister says the government is not going back on its proposed import ban on some commodities.
Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni faces the Anti-Corruption Commission a few hours after the High Court ordered his reinstatement.
And some civic society groups are planning to stage a 16-day prayer vigil in Maswingo to push President Mugabe to leave office.
It's high time the citizens rise up and demand the authorities like Shoaib Mahofa and Robert Mugabe to step down.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Some civil servants unions have declared that their members won't accept the government's $100 offer as compensation for non-payment of June salaries. Professional Educators Union of Zimbabwe President Wilson Makanyaire says his members feel that the offer is an insult to civil servants as it would be wiped out by bank charges. Takaba Firajo of the Progressive Union of Zimbabwe also said their members have rejected the offer. The government failed to pay June salaries due to lack of funds. Makanyaire tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that their members will not report for work after July 1st.
That's an insult to the teaching fraternity. That's a disappointing factor. Currently, we are consulting our people. We are consulting teachers to find out whether they agree to this. The words we need to say here are the words from the teachers, that they don't want to see anything short of their total amount in their accounts. If the government wants to give them $100 on Friday, that's a non-starter. We demand our pay in full. And that's the position of professional education of Zimbabwe we have taken today.
Does this mean that you are going to embark on an industrial action?
Definitely we are. What we are appealing to teachers today is, irrespective of whatever a union a teacher belongs to, non-affiliate or affiliate to unions, we must join hands and clearly go for a demonstration, clearly go for a strike, because that's the language the employer understands. The system of going into boardrooms doesn't work. We've been going into Apex Council several times. We've been holding meetings several times with the minister, but this is not working. This is not your opinion anyway. So what is important is for teachers to understand that teachers' unions are there because of them. And it is not leadership that is supposed to dictate the pace for them. They must understand, comply, and go for a demonstration, go for a strike.
What are you going to do in the event that the government goes ahead and deposits the $100?
They may go ahead and do it, definitely, and it's a fact. But the only thing they're going to do is to call tools down. No teacher is supposed to attend for duty come 1 July and above. We want our money in full.
And that was Professional Educators Union of Zimbabwe President Wilson Makanyaire on the line from Chinoyi with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. Labour Minister Prisca Mufumira was not available for comment.
Zimbabwe's industry minister Mike Bima says the government is not going back on its proposed import ban on some commodities as it wants to boost production in local industries. Statutory Instrument 64 of 2016 was suspended last week following public protests last Saturday at the Beitbridge border post after it was effected. Some of the listed goods under the statutory instrument include salad cream, milk, shoe polish, cooking oil, bottled water, door and window frames, and several other commodities. Bima tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that there is no going back on implementing the import ban.
The SI 64 is still on. What we've done is to give people some period of grace to say we will allow those who had initiated export procedures before the SI was announced. We'll allow goods to come in But effective from 1st of July, we won't allow those goods to come in unless one can produce a license. We are not banning any product. The products listed are not being banned, but we are only saying that these are products that we believe we are now producing in sufficient quantities to fill, to meet demand. And if the demand goes down for whatever reason, we will allow those who are capable of importing to do so, but we will give them a license before doing so. So we believe that this is a move to support our local industrialists who are coming really from a bad patch where we had really suffered through the time of the 10 or 15 years in the past where we had a hyperinflation, where we had also limitations in terms of getting funding for retooling, re-equipping, and recapitalizing. And we believe our industrialists need a little help for a short period for them to get to their feet and be able to face competition going forward.
But some informal traders are saying not much consultation was done by the government. As a result, we saw skirmishes at the border at Bidebridge.
Yeah, the mere fact is that we do have non-importers. Those importers who are in that business, we know them and we have consulted them. But again, those people whom we don't know, people who might just do things as someone just comes up and tomorrow wants to buy things from outside, obviously we are not in a position to be able to identify them and even engage them.
That was Industry Minister Mike Bima speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
A suspended Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni has been questioned by the Anti-Corruption Commission over the appointment of the city's town clerk just a few hours after a High Court judge ordered the Minister of Local Affairs to reinstate him. Manyenyeni was arrested and detained. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Some Anti-Corruption Commission officials told Studio 7 on condition of anonymity that they wanted to question Manyenyeni on the Harare City Council's appointment of James Mushore as the city's town clerk. Manyenyeni was initially suspended by Kasukwere for allegedly disregarding the minister's call to reverse Mushore's appointment. His lawyer, Love Momaduku, explains more about the latest development.
What they are now doing is that the Anti-Corruption Commission is working with police officers. So the person who actually arrested him is a police officer. And the persons who are going to be detaining him is a police officer. So what they have done is that that's the system that the Anti-Corruption Commission is now using. The Anti-Corruption Commission acts as a complainant and then the police arrest. So that's the relationship that they have developed.
Before being questioned by the commission, a Harare High Court judge, Lavenda Makoni, ordered his reinstatement and further interdicted the local government minister from suspending him. Acting local government minister Professor Jonathan Moyo had also suspended the mayor on allegations of criminal abuse of office. Manyenyeni approached the court, arguing that Moyo did not comply with the provisions of the Urban Councils Act in suspending him. Manyenyeni's lawyer, Love Momaduku, confirmed the court's decision, saying the court further interdicted local government minister Sevia Kasukwere from further suspending the city mayor pending the outcome of a case that he lodged with the Constitutional Court.
So basically the effect of this judgment is that the mayor is now back at work and will not be resuspended until the courts, the Supreme Court, has determined the matter.
Manyenyeni told Studio 7 that he was welcoming the court's verdict.
The outcome is welcome, but this is an unnecessary process. In a country as developed as we are, we shouldn't be taking these matters to court. These are obvious cases.
Board chairperson of the Combined Harare Residents Association, Simbarashe Moyo, said local residents are happy about the High Court ruling adding that this would give Manyanyeni time to address issues affecting local people.
We are actually on cloud nine. We are celebrating this High Court judgment because all along we've been waiting for this kind of judgment.
In other court news, the Constitutional Court postponed judgment in a case in which some churches are challenging the decision by the Education Ministry to introduce the National Pledge in schools, saying it violates their right to freedom of worship. Chief Justice Godfrey Chijgau Siku ordered the parties to return to the court's registrar after 30 days to allow negotiations between the churches and the government. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Church groups and civic society activists are planning to have a 16-day vigil outside the offices of Provincial Minister Shuvai Mahofa, praying for the removal of President Robert Mugabe from office, saying millions of people are suffering due to the current social and economic problems allegedly caused by his ruling ZANU-PF party.
The protesters are expected to hand over a petition to Mahofa, who would then forward it to Mr. Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe for more than 36 years. Prophet Afmane Clement Zenda of the Christian Voice International Zimbabwe told Studio 7 that church leaders and their congregates who came for 16 days at Burombo Provincial State offices and pray hard to the Almighty for the removal of Mr. Mugabe from power.
We are actually lifting up our voices first to God so that God may heal our land, and to the authorities so that they may be sensitive to the plight of the people, because we are quite burdened by this state of affairs that the leadership are considering their political terms at the expense of the livelihood or the lives of the people. We have got heart-rending situations whereby children are going to school on empty stomachs because there is a lot of, the El Nino-induced drought is taking its toll, especially in this region of Masvingo. That's why we are saying we have to look up to heaven in terms of a prayer vigil for 16 days in Masvingo until God hears us and hears the prayers of the children of Zimbabwe, and we are taking this aggressively this time.
The Christians are expected to be joined by several civic society organizations. Community Tolerance and Reconciliation Development Programs officer Zvanai Mzorodzi said they will also seek divine intervention while camping outside the provincial government offices.
The government has since the 2013 election failed to deliver on its election promises, and with the country sliding back 2008 political and economic chaos, it's high time the citizens rise up and demand the authorities like Shuai Mahofa and her partner in crime, Robert Mugabe, to step down.
Director Anuzwam Guti of the Masvingo United Residents and Ratepayers Alliance said residents are concerned about the continued violation of their socio-economic rights as a result of some challenges emanating from Zimbabwe's economic meltdown.
We are in the prayers to express ourselves to God and the authorities that the socio-economic rights of residents are under threat from the economic collapse. Issues like access to clean water, clean and potable water, education and health facilities for citizens are under serious threat. Therefore, we say the authorities should step down.
2 weeks ago, the same organizations were blocked by the police when they wanted to stage a peaceful protest on similar issues in the city. Mahofa was not reachable for a comment as she was said to be busy attending to some urgent state business. Reporting for Studio 7 from Masvingo, I am Gandhi Maramba.
Meanwhile, a World Council of Churches conference in Norway has called on churches to respect the rights of children and protect them from abuse. After receiving presentations from a committee on the rights of children, the council urged the Christian community to develop child-friendly churches that uphold their rights. One of those who came up with the recommendations and made presentations at the Indaba is Masimba Kuchera of the United Church of Christ in Zimbabwe. Kuchera told the meeting that because of bad things that happen in churches, many children are no longer going to church.
You might be aware that in several places across the world, children are not being found in churches anymore. Have you ever thought where these children are spending their time? My guess is as good as yours, but I would want to imagine that it's a more worse place than in the church. Therefore, when the CCIA was then reconstituted in 2015 after the assembly, my working group, which is the Working Group on Human Rights, Children's Rights, Women's Rights, and Freedom of Religion, providentially found itself with a program that required leadership, and that was the development of principles and tools for child-friendly churches.
Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached Kuchera for more about the conference.
I had come here specifically to make a presentation on a document that we are presenting to the Central Committee for Approval, which is called the Principles and Tools for Child-Friendly Churches. And basically, I'm a member of a commission within the World Council of Churches which is working on this document. It's called the Commission of Churches on International Affairs. And basically, the document is a document that aims to alert churches to the rights of the children and guide churches, work with churches in terms of how they can start implementing those rights of the children and also encouraging children to come back to Sunday school and to come back to church.
For some, the church might seem to be the last place where you can find child abuse. Why are you raising this issue?
The church is the last place, as you say, because the issues go unreported. You'll find that there's a lot of abuse. We get reports all the time of young children being raped, of boys and girls being abused in various ways. And we are saying the church should take a lead in a different direction. The church should be a place where the children actually run to for cover and not run away from.
And where do we stand as Zimbabwe?
We don't look good in terms of respect of children's rights.
That was Masimba Kuchera of the United Church of Christ in Zimbabwe on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Norway.
We now take a look at regional and international news.
Turkey blamed Islamic State jihadists today for the deadly assault on Istanbul's Atatürk International Airport, denouncing the latest terrorist attack in the country and vowing to fight terrorism until the end.
Police in Zambia have detained the top editors of Zambia's leading newspaper, The Post.
And as Britain and Europe struggle to come to terms with the British vote in favor of leaving the European Union, financial markets are roiling across the globe, including in Russia.
Reverend Marjorie Chikwore came to America accompanying her husband, Reverend Christopher Chikwore, who had received a calling to lead the Methodist Church before receiving her own calling that saw her enrolling into a theological seminary in North Carolina. Reverend Chikwore and her husband are now based in Dallas, Texas, where they now lead the Lovers Lane Methodist Church Zimbabwe Fellowship, which they are using to assist Zimbabweans interested in relocating to the United States. Reverend Chikwore tells Studio 7 they provide help to those that want to take advantage of America's diversity lottery that grants people a chance to get a green card and ultimately settle in the United States.
We came to the United States in the year 2000 when my husband was appointed a church in Florida. So when we came, we served in Florida for 3 years, and then I received my call to go to a theological seminary, and I was accepted at Duke University, which is in North Carolina. So we moved to North Carolina, and we served a church in North Carolina. When we were serving that church, we started a Zimbabwean congregation, and it started with like 30 people, and we grew and grew to the extent that we were the church in the community. And when we started that church, people from different denominations came, and we established one church where people from different denominations would come being under our pastor. So we developed that church, and up to today, we still have that church in North Carolina. And then we moved to Texas. When we moved to Texas, we went at this big church where it has like 6,500 members, including Africans and predominantly white. So in that service, we join the church, the bigger church. But in that church, we also worship in our Zimbabwean way. And this church is called Lovers Lane United Methodist Church, Zimbabwean Fellowship.
Are you working with any Zimbabweans back home?
Yes, we are offering fellow Zimbabweans with those opportunities to come here. We have introduced this program where we tell them to apply using this green card lottery. And we have a number who have come using this method. And when they come, we give them a place to live. We give them the basic things like food, shelter. And when they settle, we show them how to live in America, how to find jobs, where to go to church. We give them everything so that they are comfortable. And when they are comfortable and they are able to sustain themselves, we encourage them to help those who are coming. And this has gone on and on, that in the community, we are known to be those people who are pillars of Greater Dallas. And people come and we help them with anything that they need.
You also talked about the need of giving back, that those people that you have assisted, you encourage them to give back. Tell us a little bit about that.
We have, like, for example, we have a young man who just came and he didn't have anywhere to stay. So when he came to our church, we had helped this guy get a job, have an apartment and have a car. So when this young one came, he said, I will take this young man and teach him what you taught me. And as we talk right now, he has registered to go to school. He has started working. He has bought a car. So it's those things that people are stranded with that we help these people coming from Africa get. And then when they are able to work and to have papers in order and everything, we look for another opportunity for them to help so that we are not selfish. We help so that you help, like you are a blessing. You are blessed to be a blessing to others.
So for those that would like to access some of the services that you offer, where can they find you?
My number is 254-730-3833, 254-730-3833. And we can also go to the Lovers Lane United Methodist website. There you can see Reverend Christopher Chikore and his number and his email. And you can also ask for some help.
That was Reverend Marjorie Chikore speaking with us from Dallas, Texas in the United States.
As Zimbabwe marks 17 years since the death of the late vice president and the country's respected nationalist leader Joshua Mkabuko Nkomo, some say if his selflessness and love for the country were emulated by the current crop of national leaders, ordinary Zimbabweans would not be having such problems as the ones that they are grappling with at the moment. In this third edition of a six-part series in the life and legacy of the late Vice President, reporter Taurai Shaba focuses on challenges faced by Father Zimbabwe.
Former cabinet minister and veteran politician Cephas Msipa is one of the few people alive today who worked closely with both President Robert Mugabe and the late Joshua Nkomo for a long period. Msipa, one of the former senior members of the Nkomo-led ZAPU, from which ZANU-PF broke away, says Nkomo was from the start the quintessential nationalist leader respected by all and sundry. Msipa reveals that in the early 1960s, when there was talk of breaking away from ZAPU, even Mr. Mugabe, then somewhat an amateur in nationalist politics, acknowledged that Nkomo was the face of what was then known as Southern Rhodesia.
In 1960, there were people who were saying Nkomo must be replaced, and we discussed this with Mugabe. Mugabe was very faithful to Nkomo at that time, and he said to me, look, if we remove Nkomo, this country will be divided into Matabele and Mashonaland. He said, Nkomo is the only person who can keep Zimbabwe together as a nation, the Belles and Shonas together. Yes, Nkomo was such a man.
Msipa says even after the divisions in the nationalist movement ultimately couldn't be avoided, Ngoma remained willing to work for a united front, entering into various negotiations with fellow nationalists while also trying to reason with the colonial regime on the other end. The veteran politician says Ngoma was always driven by the love of his country and the ideals of freedom, justice, and equality for all. Such qualities made Ngoma put his personal feelings aside and accept to work even with those he distrusted. In the end, that also enabled him to agree to work under Mr. Mugabe, his erstwhile junior, to forge the 1987 Unity Accord following the civil strife in the early years of independence.
He expressed his disappointment that he was working with people who were not all that honest, you know. He was worried about it. He thought some people were not being honest. He expressed his disappointment on a number of occasions to say, you see these people, what they are doing. But yes, still, for the good of the country, he was able to say he accepted that he has to work with such people.
Ngoma at one point went public about what he was facing when he was brutalized by Mr. Mugabe, who accused him of sponsoring dissidents and cashing arms in an attempt to topple him.
I have suffered. I have worked so hard for this country before independence, during the war. I worked so hard after independence to make our independence stick. And this man today turns around and he calls me a traitor. Me, a traitor. A man who worked for this country so much. There is no insult to beat this one. I've never done anything wrong, and Robert knows it. I told you this is for personal power. Let him stand up and deny it. This is for personal power. He's frightened of my stature. He's frightened that he will not win the next election. This is what he's doing, trying to smear me. That's very, very sly, very dirty.
As often happens with any major decision taken by an important character in a nation's history, many people, including Komo's colleagues and supporters, questioned his wisdom in having PF Zapo agree to the Unity Accord signed by the two parties in 1987, with some even accusing him of selling the party out. Tumiso Tabengwa, a former intelligence supremo of the Zimbabwe People's Revolutionary Army, or ZIPRA, the armed wing of ZAPU, admitted that he was among those who initially felt that Ngoma was wrong to sign the accord, especially under the conditions set out by Mr. Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party. Christopher Ndiweni, a former ZIPRA combatant, who is now a member of Zimbabwe People First, led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, agrees, adding that Ngoma has to be eulogized forever for helping avert a civil war similar to that which raged for several years in Angola and Mozambique. Retired Brigadier General and former Ambassador Agrippa Mtambara, also now a member of Zimbabwe People First, says Ngoma deserves the respect of all Zimbabweans because of his selflessness and humility, which he says President Mugabe should have done better to emulate.
I've fought from the side of ZANU and ZANLA, but I've got so much respect for Dr. Joshua Nkomo. He wanted every Zimbabwean to participate in the building of Zimbabwe.
During the Liberation War, ZAPU established strong links with the former Soviet Union, and as a result, Nkomo was at various times said to be a communist who wanted to help spread communism in Southern Africa, a label used to try and malign his leadership, since communism was at that time viewed by many as nothing but an unrealistic dogma. But Nkomo's son, Sibangiliswe, said his father was neither a communist in principle nor practice.
I remember at one time he was asked why he was going to Russia to find arms. His answer was, we are getting our arms from whoever would like to help us fight this evil system. If Britain is willing to give us arms, we'll accept them. One time again, there was a journalist who asked him, and said, Nkomo, after independence, are you going to be communist? Are you going to be Eastern Bloc puppet? He said, no. We're going to be ourselves. We want to be ourselves.
Some people have pointed out that during his time in government, Nkomo failed to use his influence to bring any meaningful development to his rural home area of Kezi, its surroundings, and the Matabeleland region in general. Again, Tabengwa defends the late nationalist, saying such charges are misplaced.
Nkomo was not a constituency MP. He was a national leader, vice president of the country, not of ZAPU. His concern was to develop the entire country, not just his area where he comes from.
Nkomo may be viewed in many different ways by many people, but there is no doubt that for most Zimbabweans, the late Vice President remains the father figure that the nation is sorely missing amid the current hardships. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
Thanks, Taurai. That's it for tonight. But remember, at Live Talk, we're talking about basic commodities ban. This is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a very good night.